This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 521, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it? Kick it.
Yes,
can I kick it?
Yes,
can I kick it?
Hello and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 521. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Wrong show.
Wrong show, sorry. And Ron Richards.
Hello, we're all back together and in our respective cities.
Where it should be, just far away from each other.
Far away from each other.
Healthier that way. Healthier.
I'm snowed in. Ron is snowed in by Super Bowl goers. And what's wrong with Los Angeles right now?
Or a t-shirt to work.
All right.
And there you go.
We are from iFanboy. We like comic books. Every week we read a stack of comic books and one of us picks their favorite book. And we call that the pick of the week. We're going to talk about that book. We're going to talk about some other books from the week. We'll talk about other things. We talk. I mean, that's mainly what this is. It's three dudes talking, mostly about comics.
I should have been, we should have named it that instead of iFanboy.
It's true. Three dudes talking mostly about comics.com. I bet that's available. Hopefully, it'll be a fun time. So, we are going to talk about what happens. That being the case, there will be spoilers. So, if you don't know, you better ask somebody. I've been reading Hip Hop Family Tree. Sorry. Connor, you had the pick.
This was a crazy week of comics. I had over 20 books and. I would say most of them I found to be in the really enjoyed to really loved range.
Yeah, it was funny because when we were comparing notes about the number of books and you said, oh, I've got 22 books to read or 20 whatever books to read, we talked about whether that could be either a good thing or a bad thing.
Like, on a bad week, it's the worst thing.
Yeah,
And I actually ended up culling two books off the list. I only ended up at 20.
Oh, okay, there you go. Right.
What'd you cut? But,
one I accidentally downloaded, but I keep doing it every time. Uncanny X-Men, I keep thinking I'm going to read it, and then I forget it's Greg Land, and then the other.
Well, we're going to talk about that later on.
And I cut another one. I can't remember what it was, so I'll go back and find it. It was a DC book, I think. But so when I finished my stack, I was leaning towards Unfollow number 4, but I kept thinking of other books, and, oh, I really like that. I really like that scene. I like that beat. I like this thing they did. So I ended up sleeping on it because I don't have to write a review anymore, and got up in the morning, and it was still Unfollow number 4 because it's the book – maybe in all of comics right now that I'm really most want to know what's going to happen next. I mean, Marvel has those childish, want to know what happens next pages at the end of all their books. And yeah, sometimes, sure, I'll want to know what happens next. But this is the one where I really, like, if I had to trade for this right now, I'd spend all weekend reading it.
There was one that I thought, there was one from Marvel this week. I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was what happens next. And I was like, I do want to know. Yeah, that's on the list. So, you know, yeah. I thought that. I was like, I do.
But this is the one where I think Rob Williams and Mike Dowling, Quentin Winter, Clem Robbins really tapped into something special. I think the theme for this show has been Vertigo's back for me. Like, yeah. Between this and the next book we're going to talk about, I think they've got two super strong books, and they've got a bunch of other ones that I'm not necessarily so into, but other people are. I think this is. I think Vertigo's finally established themselves, but they found some books. But Unfollow, I think, is one of the most exciting new books to come out in a while. And we weren't sure about it at first, and the last issue was the pick of the week. And this one is pick of the week again for similar reasons, but also because now the chaos has begun in the story, right? The last issue ended with the cliffhanger of, hey, you're all going to be billionaires, but you know, if some of you were to die, you'd all make more money. And now that realization has set in, and they're all on this island, and people are starting to die. And what I really love about this issue is that the one character who we really thought was going to be a big major player, the crazy man with the beard and all the weapons, ends up being dispatched rather quickly.
Yeah.
I like that swerve quite a bit.
I like how it was kind of like it was interesting to see, you know, the one character who was kind of like having a wait a minute, what the hell is going on moment.
Am I the only one who realizes what's happening here?
Exactly. Yeah. Like the moment of clarity, and then he runs into the militia guy who's like, good, you don't get like you get it too. Okay, great, we've got weapons. And then the moment of clarity guy's like, and hits him.
Hits him and then blows his fingers off by accident, and then accidentally clunks his head on the bed. Now he's
It was like a total comedy of errors. It wasn't like this elegant, you know, execution or taking out or anything like that. It was just like, you're crazy, bonk. You know?
But he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, honestly, like, if you had to look at it, like, like the hipster millennial guy was like, I'll take him out like they do, and hits him with the head on the gun with the gun butt.
That didn't work.
That did not
work. Like, the guy's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to stop you. It's like, like, I saw that playing out like in a cinematic kind of way, and I laughed. You know,
It's a great sequence. And then I'm starting to really like these characters a lot, the ones we've been focusing on. I like the Japanese author who's a cross-dresser and has no legs. And who's apparently his book had this exact same scenario in it, and he confronts the billionaire about it. I like that scene a lot. But I don't still understand the creepy mask, or maybe it's not a mask.
Not a mask.
But it's still creepy.
It's super creepy.
It does its job really well. And I think the photojournalist is really interesting. The heiress who the millennial slept with on the plane, who may or may not have murdered a guy on the beach, probably did. Looks like she broke his neck. And also, I guess the fish could have eaten his eyes. Either way, that was a creepy death.
It's just the thing about Vertigo Comics and creepy eyes. If you want to back away. The guy in the mask is no Corinthian, but if you know, you know.
So there's just, everything is working about this book right now, and I really want to talk about how great Mike Dowling is. He's got a great texture to his work, and all the faces are interesting. And the cinematic quality that Ron you mentioned comes a lot from the way the art's laid out, and everything is working on this book right now.
I do like that the drawing still remains; it's still drawing. Like you can see the lines. There's not. Mm-hmm. It looks like ink on paper, and I don't know if it was done digitally or whatever, but
it's like, what's his name?
I don't know.
The Thor artist we love.
Isad Ribic.
Isad Ribic is like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's all there. It feels very analog. I feel like, these pages exist somewhere. You know, there's not a lot of Photoshop trickery or anything going on that I can see. It does. It feels that way anyway, so.
It's a very tactile.
Yeah. But it's pretty minimalist. If you look in the shots at the end of like the, it's impressionistic basically. Like it looks like there's a lot there that isn't. So if you're looking at like the hills behind the beach, you know, it's just lines. It's just that sort of cartoonish trickery. So, in the good way, it's great.
I think if I had to do a top five right now, I think I'd probably put this book in it.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's. I love this book. I think it's really great.
It's great.
Bold.
Yeah. And so now the question is, you know, like the Vertigo's got a couple of books that are worth hanging on to. I'm definitely like regularly reading three or four of them, I think, at least three, you know, and it'll be interesting to see. I feel like they're probably more financially accountable than they have been in the past. So we'll see if people respond to them.
I hope this book continues. I don't know how long it's planning on going. I don't know, you know, what the plan is or if it'll get there. But for right now, I think it's really interesting and exciting.
140 yes. issues.
I mean, if that's – is that the plan? Is that
That would be a horrible plan. No, that's a long fucking time.
It makes sense. I mean, you know, like given the concept and given all that sort of stuff.
It makes sense from a marketing standpoint, but I don't want to read this story for
– 12 years?
Yeah. Like, it will wear out. This, I don't think this is even, I don't think this is a 60 issue concept. I think this is a 25 issue concept.
I was gonna say 30. Yeah, 30 yeah. issue concept. Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, because that's the thing. Because the question is that, like, is all the action gonna stay contained to this island in the Bahamas where this all happens?
Or if it does, then I could see it being 12 issues.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, is it a locked room scenario?
I like, know? The idea, like, that issue 5 could just be like 2 weeks later, and there's like 6 guys left, like an episode of Community.
Yeah. And it's 5 people we haven't seen yet before.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Everybody else is dead. You know? That's great. There's just like a bloody stump robot leg and a wedding dress. Oh, that guy's dead.
I haven't seen you before. Well, I was in the background of this panel and this panel.
I mean, it's similar to Lost in that, you know, like that you know, we could see more plane passengers. You know,
I'm out.
Well, that's the danger of it, is that you create the scenario where there's, you know, this locked room kind of situation where there are people and you know, and
I was about to say, yeah, but there's no smoke monster, and I thought, oh right, there's that mask guy. the mask guy really is my hesitancy.
The phantom cheetah. But I find all these things interesting, but that's what I like about the book.
Never again.
Yeah. Yeah.
No smoke monsters.
So a lot of credit to editor Shelley Bond, who's
well, she's old school though.
Old school, but also put in just a really tough position to be running Vertigo.
Well, and the thing is that it seems to be. I mean, like, Vertigo definitely hit some rough times, and then, you know, it seems like they kind of regrouped and they made the move to the West Coast with the rest of DC, and they hired a bunch of new editors. And you know, it takes time to kind of, you know, to kind of turn the aircraft carrier. You know, but
I have this idea in my head that someone's like a dark, smoky room, and like Karen Berger's like sort of just reading this under candlelight, going, "You've got it, Shelley. You've got it."
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if it's political enough for Karen Berger, but yeah, I don't know. It's nice to see the results, and it's also nice to see the volume. Because I think that's the real thing, because it's like, it's one thing to, you know, because I feel like Vertigo was coming out in drips and drabs, because I feel as if they had lost their confidence, they'd lost their swagger a little bit, in terms of what made them Vertigo. But now it just seems like every week there's not just one, but like two new Vertigo series that are on there.
It feels like a soft launch. It feels they're not relaunching the whole line all at once, but they are putting a consistent amount of new books out on a regular basis.
Right. Yeah, which is good. I mean, you need to build that consistency, and you need to build that expectation with the readers, and you need to get a couple of things that are solid, and it seems like they're doing that. So, yeah.
Well, let's talk about the next book on the list, The Sheriff of Babylon, number 3, from Tom King, Mitch Gerard, Travis Landon. I've been enjoying this book, but this is probably my favorite issue because, much like Unfollow, I don't know where this is going. Everything is a gray area. And the things that I expect are going to happen don't happen, or something else completely different happens.
Yeah.
It's frustrating in a good way, because that's how it is for the characters.
Tom King is definitely, at least especially on the sort of creator-owned side of stuff, is not a guy who's giving you a lot to begin with. You kind of have to trust him to go along. And I found, actually, not even just creator-owned, that's in a lot of the books that he's doing. You just kind of have to trust him and go. And it was certainly like that first book, this first issue, I actually had a hard time grasping. I wasn't sure what I was reading or what I was supposed to be thinking. And then, like, as we go on, we're filling in a lot of those blanks. And I think that you're right. Like, this issue, I'm starting to get an idea of who these people are and why they go. You know, but the only reason that I'm sticking around this long on a book is because I trust the creators at that point. Like, it's a gamble for them, basically. It's a long game.
Only one note I have about this that I thought was weird was... So in the opening scene, the woman, who I don't know, who's playing both sides of the fence pretty hard, goes to visit our main character, Christopher, and there's another dude in his trailer, and as they're talking, his face is blocked by the air conditioner, which I thought was a weird artistic choice.
Well, it makes it easier not to have to draw the face. I mean, it sounds like it's a classic case of artist laziness right there.
It's page 7 on your digital copy. But I loved that all these different characters have been following are starting to come together. I love the ending scene, which as I was understanding what was happening, my mouth literally fell open because I realized what was happening in the background. This book really, I think, to me, captures the moral gray area that is the Iraq War. And as someone like Tom King, who comes from the intelligence services, it feels very authentic.
It certainly does. I mean, even if it doesn't, I don't know the difference.
Right.
So it the fact that he is, like, I'm giving him that benefit of the doubt, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, okay, maybe this is what it feels like to be on the ground there, and I know that the guy who writes this knows, so I'm gonna give him that, I guess. And it's effed up.
It is effed up, and it's all. I mentioned it's frustrating. You don't know who to trust. Everyone sort of has their own agenda, and it points in different directions, and so it's so it. I don't want to say it's like The Wire, but in that sense, it is like The Wire in that everyone lives in the gray. There's no black and white. Mm-hmm. In this.
I find like it's very confusing. I mean, one of the themes I'm taking out of it, which is nothing new. I've seen this. We've seen so many things written on the Middle, told on the Middle East, is that it's all very foreign. Like, so nothing that you expect to be, the way that we're used to and how people react or act or talking or how, that, like, nothing is what you think it is. So, I mean, just imagine how stressful that must be if you just have, like, this job to do.
Right.
And you can't, it's not even that you can't get a straight answer. You don't even know if you're getting a straight answer. You don't.
Well, that's the rant that Christopher goes on after he sleeps with the woman whose name I don't remember, is that I'm just trying to help here. I don't understand what's going on. I can't, I can't figure out how to help people. I'm just here to help. I'm confused. And that's sort of the feeling you get as a reader is, from your traditional black and white standpoint, the good guy's here to help and let him help. But, everyone has their agendas, even the girl he's sleeping with. So,
especially her.
Yeah. I love this book. I grabbed onto it pretty quickly. Although, it's if you're not into moral uncertitude, it's probably not the book for you.
All right.
Moral ambiguity.
You should put that on the cover. if you're not into moral ambiguity, this probably isn't the book for you. This is why we keep getting those cover quotes, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. But Tom King's on a roll. We'll be talking about another one of his books later, and he's moving up the ladder very quickly.
He certainly found his voice.
He's a very talented writer.
Sure.
So the big release this week, Spider-Man number one, people were looking forward to the Miles Morales book, which featured the creative team from the old Ultimate Comics Spider-Man book with Brian Michael Bendis and Sarah Pacelli, Justin Ponsor on colors.
And Gaetano Carlucci inking Sarah Pacelli.
Ink assists,
yeah, which was not on the, I don't believe, it did originally, because I did, the art did look different.
Well, look, I don't know.
They're older. They're in the 616.
I don't know if you know, but people need jobs in Italy, Ron.
I know.
So the
Gaetano Father Guido Sarducci and Gaetano Carlucci.
Romeldo Fulcherelli.
I just want to point out that Ron Richards doesn't sound Italian, but he is, so he can say those things. and also, she's more of a big deal now.
Yeah.
So she can command probably a higher page rate, afford to maybe bring somebody else in.
And work a little less.
Or, she's doing something, who knows? I got this, and I didn't really, I don't ever know what's coming anymore, because I just look in on the Wednesday, and that's what there is. I was really happy to see Sarah Pacelli's name.
Yeah.
I was really thrilled about that, especially since on that other Bendis book, Iron Man this week, Dave Marquez had been, I don't know if it's probably just a fill-in, but was Mike Diodato on that. I was like, oh.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I have no idea. I don't look at the solicits anymore either or anything like that. But, I think the Marvel style is kind of like we talked about Avengers last week. Kubert did the first four issues. Now Ostar's doing them. You might get four issues of Diodato on Iron Man until
that'll be the case. Not horrible.
Yeah, not hard. I mean, hey, they got to keep up the weekly or biweekly shipping schedule.
Jesus.
Yeah, when I saw Captain Marvel, I'm like, Captain Marvel number two's out already?
I don't even notice it anymore. I just figured that is the rocket ship of time that is my life now.
No, it's and that's
every 2 weeks.
So they comics is not helping, stressing you out. So.
Yeah, okay, I totally see that.
So back to the book at hand.
What do you think?
It was interesting. I've been trying to stay away from the complaints we've been having about Marvel about not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't think they're always justified, but
here,
I was confused because I thought that the whole thing was that Miles slipped his way back into the 616 from the Secret Wars world.
Yep.
And so it would sort of be a man out of time or out of world. And as we saw in the Spider-Man miniseries, there was something shocking that happened to the Miles Morales of the 616 world. Mm-hmm. And so now here we basically just have a continuation of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, but the difference being he is now an Avenger
Well, with the, no, also with the rewind, is that everything with his parents are okay?
Yeah, that the other
which is a big, you know, because not only did you know Miles end up in 616, but his whole world basically got reset.
Yeah.
To a point before things got horrible. Thus is the magic of Doom and Secret Wars.
It's just weird. It's like why do that whole thing at the end of Secret Wars where he, you know, gets back in because of a sandwich or whatever it was he gave to was
hamburger. It Molecule
Man? Molecule Man.
Well, a hamburger is technically a sandwich.
It is. It's two pieces of bread surrounding meat. So,
you know what we
yeah.
should do? About 10 minutes on this.
Okay. What's your favorite sandwich, Josh?
Are we counting a hamburger yet? Because I don't know that we've established that.
Well, wait, we haven't determined whether are we all in agreement that a hamburger is technically a sandwich?
I believe I've
heard of a sandwich. It's a sandwich family. It's like a genus.
Well, it's like a rhombus, like a square. A rhombus is a square, but a square isn't a rhombus.
It's a type of sandwich.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe it was originally referred to as a hamburger sandwich.
Yes, I believe so.
But
I believe
so
too.
Feel like
its origins.
It's sort of come out of that. Yeah, like it's broken away from the sandwich family. Because if you say sandwich to me, I'm not a sandwich guy. I hear sandwich and I go, eh. Because
well,
I'm thinking it's like kind of cold meat and bread.
Just to give the context, you know, according to our the lovely Wikipedia, a hamburger (parentheses also called a beef burger, hamburger sandwich, burger, hamburg, or cheeseburger when served as a slice of cheese). So hamburger sandwiches.
That's what that means.
Yeah.
What is a bacon burger?
That's a burger with bacon.
Huh, interesting.
Bacon cheeseburger?
I like that there are many claims to the invention of the hamburger, but no one knows actually who it is. And there's at least five guys who claim they invented it.
The Earl of Hamburg?
No. It was a reference to a Hamburg steak.
Mm.
So... but in July 5th, 1896, the Chicago Daily Tribune made a highly specific claim regarding a quote-unquote hamburger sandwich in an article about a quote-unquote sandwich car.
So you know what? The thing is, this is not a light show. We have a lot of books and a lot of emails, so...
Okay, sorry. All right.
Let's get back to the book in which it's confusing that they just continued on the old series, basically... They made a big deal of him sneaking into the new world, and yet it's just like... What if he hadn't snuck in? What if he hadn't given him the hamburger? Then what would be going on here?
This goes back to what I said a couple of weeks ago, which is that the comics that we knew and love previously, they do not exist anymore. And we are not, as readers, we are not entitled to any sort of explanation, any sort of logic, any sort of making sense. It is purely just them going, well... Why don't we just put Miles in, we'll just mix everybody together and just write the stories we want to write. And okay, sure. So and we can just enjoy them or not.
Well, I get that. I enjoyed this book quite a bit. It's just I was like, wait, I don't. It's okay. And that's what that was what happened.
I was very confused as well too. This book was not a skyrocket. Oh my God, this is how great is this? It was just more like kind of huh. Okay, I guess.
I left this to last because it was the most anticipated book, and I was expecting it to, you know, be a contender. It wasn't really
they're
a particularly.
They're older now, considerably.
Yeah, they look older. Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
he's skinnier. He's lanky here.
I feel like we've gone from like 12 to 16.
Yeah. It definitely feels like 15 or 16. It definitely feels older. I don't know. I mean, it's good, but it didn't feel like the same magic that it once had. I guess.
It's going back to a well.
Yeah.
You're gonna play around. You're gonna see if you feel it, if it's changed or whatever. We've all moved on.
Yeah.
See, to me, the interesting thing would have been a man out of world.
Yeah.
Would have been an interesting take on Miles. This seems to be the same take on Miles.
Yeah.
I don't mind that though. I don't know that I need that. I mean, that's not why I liked it before. And a lot of times, if you're taking the thing that I like, just do that thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I enjoyed it just because I was like, oh, this is familiar and I like that, or you know, I really liked it.
Right.
We'll see.
Your conundrum, Josh.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what I really enjoyed. I am on board for Spidey.
Spidey rocks.
Spidey number three. Did you tell me that Nick Bradshaw was on art?
Yes, I did the first time we talked about this book. But
I don't.
As with many things, I feel like I say on the show, You guys are probably reading magazines.
Wait, hang on. Let me finish this article.
Yeah, exactly.
Hang on.
Nick Bradshaw is drawing Spidey, and he is awesome, and I have only one complaint, and that's the stupid head. But other than that...
Yes, yeah. I did see the stupid head, and I agree with you. No, no. I made a mental note that I got to try Spidey. I have not gotten to try one or two, but I was more like, I like the idea of just picking up the issue and not having any context. And this reminded me of everything that I loved about Kurt Busiek's old Untold Tales of Spider-Man, but with Nick Bradshaw art.
Yes, and they're all one and done issues.
Yeah,
they're just every issue so far he's fought a classic villain. This is basically, like you said, it's a Peter Parker in high school story.
Yep.
This one's about him fighting Mysterio, and then the Lizard, mostly the Lizard, and it's just super fun. And Nick Bradshaw's art is off the chain. It's fucking crazy.
It's great.
Every page is packed full of details.
Yeah.
Did you just say off the chain?
Off the chain.
Off the chain.
Did you just pick up a hip-hop dictionary from 2005?
It's off the chain.
You were the one reading hip-hop family tree.
Anyway, I'm only on 82 right now, so things are deaf.
They're not off the chain yet.
Fred, I don't know when that happened.
And then this issue is all mostly double-page spreads, and just gorgeous.
I mean, I love Nick Bradshaw when he was on Wolverine and the X-Men with Jason Aaron. I think Nick Bradshaw is one of the, he's one of the artists I was most excited about a couple years ago, and I feel like it kind of went away. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what happened there, but I'm glad to see this, and it was just great, and I poured over every page, and so I'm on board. I'm totally on board. So,
super.
Connor, I'm sorry it took me this long. It took only three issues, though, so, I don't know who Robbie Thompson is. I thought that was a character in Spider-Man, but I guess it's a writer.
I think I looked at this at one point, then I don't want to read it.
It's a Lizard story. It's just a Lizard story.
Okay.
Each issue is a single story of Peter Parker, young Spider-Man, fighting a classic role.
Oh, all right.
And this one is worth looking at for the art alone. I mean, he's been great all three issues, but this one really was something special art-wise.
Yeah, it was.
And if you're the kind of person who, like me, who prefers young Spider-Man to be young, this is a great book for you.
Well, there you go. Yep. Fair enough. The next up, we have we're just marveling along right here. Marvel S books, Scarlet Witch number 3. Now I know I listened to the shows that I was not on. Finally, where we talked about this, and it was a not my thing scenario.
Yes.
Did either of you read this issue?
No.
Yes, I did. Because I'll give you one word.
I know exactly why.
You know why?
Yeah.
Dylan.
Yeah. You know what makes a big difference?
What?
Dylan.
Dylan. Connor, did you know Steve Dillon drew this?
I did, because I wrote the script for the show.
So good.
It was much better, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, so they go to Ireland, and for a little bit I was like, I feel like I'm reading Preacher. It was definitely a touch of that. But it was – I know there's like – her thing now is that she's a witch, real witch, and she's got Agatha Harkness's. Boy, that's a high concept pitch that doesn't seem it's going to go anywhere. Well, it's a lady, and she's being followed around by an old ghost lady. Okay, good luck with that book. But I enjoyed it. She basically went to Ireland. It was almost like it was like a Hellblazer issue. That's what it felt like. Not Preacher. Yeah.
As I read it, I thought, I really hope Josh is reading this, because this is like, it's Steve Dillon drawing in Ireland with magic, like that sort of thing. I was like, this is right up Josh's alley.
And James Robinson did a perfectly fine job at sort of placing us there with the dialogue and the characters involved. And it was really fun. Dillon's only around for two or three issues, I think.
I felt like it's been a different artist every issue, so I don't expect him to stick around.
Oh, maybe it was only – I just remember seeing him talking about it and then saying, oh, I'm going to miss Wanda. And I was like, how many are you doing? But I knew it wasn't many. It was great. It was super fun, if only for sort of that.
Is it a
nice
part of a long story, or can I just pick up and read this one?
You could just read it.
You can just read it. I mean, there's a bigger thing going on.
I have barely any idea what it is to begin with, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just pick it up and read it, I think. So
town in Ireland has a ghost problem or witch solved.
They call Dr. Veckman?
Yeah. Exactly. Who would name a child Oscar? It was really great looking. I was really like, I was, when somebody whose art you really like comes along and you haven't seen it in a little while, you always kinda go, well, I hope it's good, and like, no, it's real good. Like Steve Dillon, master storyteller. And he gets to draw on Ireland, so like it's his comfort zone too.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
Super good.
All right, we're going to take a quick break to remind you that you can help out the iFanboy movement.
Are we a political movement now?
We are now a political movement. You can go to ifanboy.com/support, and there are multiple ways there where you can help out the movement. You can click on the link to amazon.com, and any of your purchases, comic books, video games, very large televisions, whatever you want to buy, we get a little cut of the sale, not from you, but from Amazon themselves. So that's actually the most, you know, seamless way for you to help out iFanboy in the process, and we thank everybody who's done that. If you'd like to be help us in a little more direct manner, taking money from your pocket and putting it into ours, you can sign up for an iFanboy membership for $3 a month and $30 a year, and we thank our members. You guys are great, and you're fantastic. If you don't want a recurring payment, you can just give us a one-time donation, and we thank everybody who's done that as well. We've gotten a couple more in this week, and you guys are amazing, and you help us keep the servers running, the downloads flowing. We're moving into movie season, so you're gonna get even more comics talk from me and Connor, and maybe we'll pull in Josh every once in a while. So go to ifanboy.com/support, and we thank you for your support.
What is our manifesto?
What is our platform? What do we stand for? It's respect for women.
Right, obviously.
I mean, it's not what we're about, but
I know we said we wouldn't make that joke anymore, but it was right there. It was right there.
I am so torn between wanting to join in and saying stop doing somebody else's bit.
It's been
at least a year
since we it's been longer than a year. It's a longer fruit.
And I just want you to I just want you to put yourself in the shoes of a random audience member right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would
go
like
back and listen to the old shows is what they should.
I believe I'm the only one still listening to that show, by the way.
That's still a thing.
I would like to point out to you that they released an episode after Star Wars came out, and they had a lengthy discussion over the legal issue of them suing for the use of stormtroopers hitting the floor in The Force Awakens.
Isn't it ground?
No, the floor. Stormtroopers hitting the floor. Or the ground. I don't know. Either way, no matter what, they are pursuing legal action against the Lucas people.
Tommy snacks. That's in case you don't know what we're talking about. All right, so
my friend Michael Ian Black.
We mentioned Tom King earlier. This is his other book. We're talking about The Vision number 4. We took a lot of flack for the time that The Vision number 1 was the pick of the week because Josh loved it, Ron hated it, and I was in the middle. Apparently, everyone on the show has to love the pick of the week, according to some people. But I've actually fully embraced this book now. I wasn't sure in the beginning. It was a little, the tone was strange, but now I'm really into the strange sort of not quite horror tone, but definitely sort of Stepford Wives-y, suburban ennui, but with robots tone, which I like. Also, I really loved the wife calling the husband. He's busy at work, but in this case, he's busy fighting a giant monster.
That was a that was a highlight for me, is the phone conversation.
No, I'm listening. I'm just also fighting Giganto.
Yeah, I can't come home right now. Listen, we have to make sacrifices. There's a weird American Beauty esque tone to this. Which I'm picking up on. Yeah, I like it too.
Listen to you. You so don't want to.
I like the art a lot.
The story is compelling. This is the one that at the end I was like, I do want to know what happens next. She killed a dude.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
It's pretty big thing that happens.
Really is. And also, like, it's one of those, like, she's just, it's not intentional. Like, she just doesn't know what she's doing, but she kind of does, and like it just keeps getting worse, and it's so uncomfortable, but it's so well done.
Right. It's getting worse. It's that rolling down the hill scenario, right? Yeah. So somebody saw her burying the body of the what's his name, the dude with Grim Reaper, tried to blackmail her, really just into leaving town, not even into giving her money. But then that snowballs into he shoots at her, but she can become intangible, so the bullets go through her and hit his son. His son has a crush on her daughter. And so then he gets killed. So it's all a big mess. And I love that it's her big mess that she has to constantly be fixing under the nose of the Vision and her children.
And much like Unfollow, it just gets worse.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's the thing. My only complaint about this is that scene, I saw that scene play out before it happened. Like I when it happened, I was like, oh, of course. Like So I mean, I definitely saw it coming. So there wasn't a lot of like surprise to it. But I do like the tension, and I also like the that she just can't stay out of trouble now. Like it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And great covers too for this comic.
Yeah. Yeah. The art I think is the best part of this.
Gabriel Hernandez Walter.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. And the cover was by Mike Del Mundo. So, I gotta say, I'm loving Nova. I was sad that Jerry Duggan moved off of it, but
you didn't like the first issue for that reason. You would not give it a fair shake.
Yeah, I liked it. And this issue, you know, so that he's continuing his kind of like mini team up with Ms. Marvel and Spider-Man, Miles Morales. As like the young kind of Avengers, and in this issue they fight the villain. You know, seems to be Mole Man, but actually turns out that Mole Man's son has revolted and taken over all the monsters and the Moloids. And there's a really, really sad scene where Mole Man cries and says, "Why is my son doing this?" and it was actually really, really good. And the theme of this, especially with the floating, you know, the in and out nature of Sam's father, whether it's his father or not his father, and all this other stuff. But it's this kind of father and son kind of theme that we see played out with Mole Man, which is great. And this is the first issue, not the first issue, but this is an issue where, you know, Sam really feels the burden of being Nova and just how his life is falling apart around him while he's trying to be a hero.
It's Peter Parker syndrome.
Yeah, really. Yeah, but not a total copy of Peter Parker.
No, but it's a common thing amongst a young hero who's in school and has a family, and so he spends all day fighting the Mole Men with alongside Miles Morales and Miss Marvel. Because they're all Avengers together, and gets home and he just wants to pass out and realizes he hasn't done any of his homework.
Yeah.
And so, throws his helmet across the room and says he hates it.
Yeah.
Has the Nova helmet always looked like that from the side? The giant star sort of pointing out past the
I feel like it's more pronounced with this one, but yeah, this the black, he's got the black Nova costume, and it has been like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I like the gold Nova costume.
Can he see past that?
I think so. Like,
it would really affect his vision.
I wonder if there's some sort of like it's like Iron Man almost, where he sees through lenses, you know. But
if you put your hand to your eyebrows and then put your other hand in a T form at your nose, that really would bug you.
Oh yeah, no, it's really hard to see left and right. I mean, peripheral vision is really important when fighting, and
so this was super fun.
Get some kind of cosmic awareness or.
No, that's why I think it's like Iron Man, where he's got where he's seeing through lenses that is accounting for the peripheral. You know, like there's the helmet provides some sort of, you know, like goggle kind of, you know, function. I don't know.
I'm so nerdy. I thought you wanted to talk about this book because they use the Fantastifont on the cover.
That was one of the things. I saw the cover. I was like, ooh, I like it when you shake it up a little. Yeah, they definitely use the iFanboy font, which we took from a Marvel.
So. We bought the font. It's not.
We did. It's legitimate.
That's,
yeah.
That's their problem.
Yeah.
I almost accidentally read Uncanny X-Men number 3, Rob, but I caught myself.
Yet more theft from Jack Kirby.
Just squeeze every. No, he didn't do the. He didn't do the lettering. But anyway. So I want to talk about Uncanny X-Men number 3 because I want to give benefit of the doubt here, and I want to call praise where praise is deserved, but then also. Talk about the challenge and the difficulty with reading this book at all. I really like what Cullen Bunn is doing with the story. I really like it. So what has happened is that even though I don't know how or what or whatever, but so there's this Mpox, you know, it's legacy virus again. It's a disease that is killing mutants that seems to be caused by Terrigenesis and the Inhumans and all that sort of stuff. And there is a group of mutants who are hunting down all of the healers, the mutant healers.
It's like they're playing Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, it's true. And so Magneto and Psylocke and Sabretooth, their little team is dispatched in this particular issue. They're trying to find Triage to save Triage, and then Monet goes to Tibet to go find Zorn, and they're basically trying to protect all of the healer mutants so that they don't get killed. You know, it's just an interesting dynamic, and it's an interesting story to unfold. It harkens to the classic kind of X-Men story that I remember and want. And the only problem is, I'll give credit where credit's due. This is not full awful Greg Land. Like, there is actual like drawing.
Well, that's the thing. Greg Land is a very talented artist when he's not tracing. Yep.
Exactly, and there are pages where I'm like, oh, this doesn't look awful. This doesn't look traced. This looks drawn. This looks cartooning. It's like either the inking or the coloring
look awful.
Is right.
Ron for my fanboy, right on the cover.
Exactly. But then you turn the page and you get back to a big page or the big splash or whatever that looks just like the Greg Land that we know and loathe. You know, so it's like, ah. But I'm sticking with it. I'm not just, you know, shunning it for shunning's sake. And I do want to give Cullen Bunn credit for coming up with a compelling story. So
is Triage a member of G.I. Joe?
No.
I guarantee at some point he was.
Because it sounds like a G.I. Joe medic.
It does. It really does.
Like a latter version.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that would be confusing.
Yeah.
Although, wasn't there a character called Medic?
There was. There was.
And aren't you supposed to just call out Medic? And doesn't that...
That's only if you get hit with the kickball, and then you have to sit down and call out Medic.
So Doc is there, and he's like, "Nah, sorry, you asked for Medic."
He's too busy hanging out in people's bathroom windows. So, I barely got to that one. Wait for it.
This subject's going to come up again in the email section, so we'll table this and talk about. We'll go back into the War Corner, which we haven't talked about. This is the War Corner, Garth Ennis edition, because there were. I like living in a world, guys, where. There are two Garth Ennis War comics being published. Right. Normally, he's got to scrape and crawl to get one, but now we've got two simultaneous Garth Ennis War comics. They both came out in the same week. So first, we'll talk about War Comics number 16. This is his long-running series he's been doing at various comic companies. He's 16 issues into the Avatar run. And did anyone else read this one?
So
I did not.
Because I think that you just keep putting these here to fuck with me.
Sort of, but this was actually one of my favorite.
All right,
issues.
So I specifically bought this.
Mm-hmm.
I bought War Stories on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been waiting many hours, and it still has not shown up on the app, which I need to read it.
You know, you just hit refresh, and it shows up.
Yeah, yeah, I tried that. It isn't working. So that's something's weird. Wrong.
All right, well,
I just want to point out I tried. I'm not going to let this happen to me again. I have the next book as well. I just haven't.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that in a second. But this one, great title, Send in a Gunboat, or Send a Gunboat. And this is a story about all the light and fast boats that patrolled the English Channel during the war. They're mostly made of wood, so they could move quickly. And so in that sense, they were easy targets for being destroyed. And this is about the crew of one particular gunboat. And it starts off with a really great sequence where they fight a Nazi boat, which is very similar in construction. Apparently all the boats in the English Channel are very small and light. And it ends with some R&R, in which they meet some women at a bar that does not go as expected. And this is one of those classic Garth Ennis war comics in which great war action about a part of the war I didn't know a lot about, great characterizations, great war history. There's a great meeting in the middle where the crew meets their higher-ups. And so you get some of that upstairs, downstairs conversation going on, and then some pub action with some ladies. And this is just like perfect Garth Ennis war stuff going on. I mean, the art is what it is. 16 issues in, I've accepted it, but this is one of my favorite stories so far in terms of character and situation that they've done so far in this particular run. Moving on to Johnny Red number 4. Now, Ron, you had been reading this. Are you still reading Johnny Red?
Yes, I am reading this. Sorry.
Nazis got him.
What I liked about this issue a lot is that usually in these kind of stories, and what I mean is old man telling a war story about a famous fighter, usually it ends in some sort of glorious death. Here, almost as a throwaway, he says, oh, no, he survived the war. He made it to the end. He crashed his last plane, but he was rescued by the French. And that was sort of – so you know it's not that kind of story. It's not the – tragic tale of Johnny Red. It's a heroic tale of Johnny Red. And I liked that little swerve a lot. And this continues to be super fun. I love the art in this book. Yeah. Josh, you actually did read this issue.
No, I tried to. I didn't make it. I was sort of unaware of this, and then I saw it was on the list, but there wasn't enough time. There wasn't
unaware.
Enough time.
We've been talking about this book.
Yeah, I know.
I like how in this issue we get a lot of the storytelling, the flashback. We come back to the present, and the guy goes, "So this is what we can get to." And the guy's like, "No, that's nothing to do with this. But let me continue." And so it's you got this guy in the present who wants to know the story about this plane and this guy, and it's just getting drawn out by this old man. And I like that. So
I like that the art looks so much like Riley Rossmo, Keith Burns. I like that Johnny Red wears a weird kind of vest.
Yeah,
he looks kind of like a mountain man flying a plane. But this is super fun, too. Yeah. So that was your Garth Ennis edition War Corner. Not featuring Josh Flanagan.
Sad.
You're fucking with
it's
me.
It's not a war corner.
Fan of war comics.
Yeah, it's not Josh a war corner without Josh.
I have a lot going on. I was really happy. I read my books early. I finished them all up Wednesday. I was like, all right, we're in good shape. And somebody didn't get us a list until early this morning.
All right. Well, those are the books.
Don't you point your Nazi fingers at me.
You do see the shipping list every week, right? You know what's coming out.
No, he said earlier he doesn't look, so.
I see.
That's why. Anyway, all right, so those are the books we read this week. Go to ifanboy.com, and you can comment on the this episode to talk about the books you read this week. But in the meantime, we want to answer your questions. You send us emails. We respond to them. And our first email comes from Patrick from Greenville, North Carolina, who says, I finished your year-end review podcast, and after thinking about it for 3.5 hours, I came to the conclusion that it's way past time to read a Neal Stephenson book. While I could think about it for another 3 to 4 hours, I figured I should just ask you guys, what should my first Neal Stephenson book be? I imagine we're all going to have different answers. So
Patrick
Josh
originally tweeted this at us, and this is not a conversation you can have in 140 characters.
No, it's not. I mean, yeah, just like you can't think about it for just, you know, 5 minutes. But luckily, we put in some time. We thought about it pre-show. Josh, since you are the resident, self-professed Neal Stephenson president of the fan club, we'll let you start. what book would you go with first?
Honestly, if I had to tell you, I wish I had some more information. Because...
Oh, jeez. Oh, God.
I mean, for me, the gateway in Neal Stephenson is usually... Snow Crash.
Yes.
It's that short.
And that is my recommendation. That was my
Snow
first...
Snow Crash is mine as well.
I read Snow Crash in 1993 or 94.
See, here's the problem. I worry a little bit that that's too...
Nope.
It isn't?
No, I think it's a great too out of date. It's a great gateway book. It's his style is there, but it's also not 1,000 pages. So
that is basically the point.
You're not getting into something too deep, you know.
Yeah, and it's no more out of date than any of the William Gibson stuff from the 80s. You know what I mean? Like, when I was reading Mona Lisa Overdrive in the early 90s, you know, from the mid-80s, I wasn't like, oh, well, actually, we have Windows now. Like, I didn't, you know, like, it's you know, I think the tech is outrageous and fantasy enough that you can go with it, that you don't get hung up on it. Yeah. And that book is solid. That book is great.
Yeah, no, it is. I haven't read it since I originally read it, but that's not my favorite book, though. Like that's
no, but that's a great introductory book.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the starting point, I think.
If you like that, I would read Cryptonomicon, except it's 1,000 pages. So that's
wow. I would actually say
Cryptonomicon's my favorite book. So
I would say to go to Reamd.
800.
I would go Snow Crash, Cryptonomicon, Reamd, and then Seven Eves.
I would go. I don't even put Cryptonomicon in there. Cryptonomicon is the one that turned me off a lot.
This is why you got to ask the guy what he likes, because it sounds like you like the William Gibson-esque, you know.
Oh yeah, cyberpunk
kind of stuff. Whereas I liked Snow Crash fine. I didn't love the Diamond Age, which is another sort of cyberpunk.
I love Diamond Age. Yeah,
I didn't. It's good, but the Cryptonomicon was the one that got me because it was a combination of techie stuff and then history. And so what you had is a story that was going on in, it was late 90s, sort of tech and World War II simultaneously. And then from there, I read the Baroque trilogy. I read all the other ones in the middle. But I read the Baroque trilogy as those were coming out. And those are each 1,000 to 1,200 pages. And there are 3 volumes, and those are taking place in the late 1700s. And there's pirates, and I when you get to the end of a 3,000 plus page story, and you're like, oh man, I wish that wasn't over. That was me. So again, so this depends on what kind of person you are and what you're gonna like. He's got something for everybody, not everybody, but he's got something for some different people.
The reason why I think Snow Crash is the best choice, not just the length, is because I viscerally remember reading this for the first time and being done at the first page and going, holy shit, where's this guy been all my life?
You get
his style and his tone right off the bat. And if you like that, if you're one page in and you like what you're reading, because he has a very specific way of writing, then you're going to be in. So that's why I think Patrick, read Snow Crash first.
Say that we just talked about that and you're like, I don't know if I like the cyberpunk stuff all that much. I actually think you could start with Seven Eves.
No, I don't think so.
I'm too far in. I guess you're right.
People who I've given the book to who have read before did not like it. I think you have to be in on him before to get to that book. That would be the most Neal Stephenson CE book that he's written in a while.
Yeah.
It's the least mainstream.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. Read The Martian. Yeah.
Martian's a great book too.
And also, I think we're underestimating Reamd in that I think ReamD is really it could be an accessible book. Like if you're worried about
ReamD's a super accessible book.
Yes. Yeah, ReamD is super accessible. You know, so you could I would say either Snow Crash or ReamD. That's what those are my two.
I mean,
so,
ReamD was described as him trying to do like a Die Hard in his style.
And he did it.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. I wouldn't read Anathem first.
I would never read Anathem. I would forget it existed.
I liked it.
It was terrible.
I'm a super fan though. Was it terrible? I didn't like it in his first person.
I liked one chapter of it.
Huh.
The rest I could not stand.
I liked it a lot. It's not my favorite, but I liked it a lot. Yeah, but Kryptonomicon is my favorite Neal Stephenson book. So, I want to hang out with Bobby Shafto all day.
All right, next email. Aaron from Boston, Massachusetts says, I've thought about this question quite a while now, years even. Really thought about it. I love that this is every email starts with this.
It's really, everyone's really embracing it, which I just got to applause it. I got to applause. Right. So, yeah.
I've thought about this question for quite a while, years even. Really thought about it, but it's time to stop thinking and ask, why aren't you guys reading Transformers versus G.I. Joe? Has this book been coming out for years?
Yeah, it has, actually.
I recall that none of you are into Transformers, but the G.I. Joe factor of this book alone should make it a must-read. The G.I. Joe segments have always been some of my favorite parts of the show, and if you started a regular G.I. Joe corner segment, I would be elated. I don't think Nemesis Enforcer has been in the book yet, so that might be why you're holding off. But come on, it's only a matter of time.
I don't get me wrong. We earlier in the show, we made a joke about G.I. Joe. We made a joke about Doc in a window. I love that. I do not want whatchamacallit, new G.I. Joe Transformers stuff. I want to move on. I don't want to live in nostalgia.
I don't want to live in nostalgia. What have you been doing for 10 years?
This is a man who has complex thoughts on Lobot.
Yeah, true. Listen, all right. I've got limits to the amount of nostalgia I want to live. You know,
you've blocked out your nostalgia, and that's not included in it.
Yeah.
That can exist as it was in the past. I mean,
we petered out in those G.I. Joe books. We were all into those new ones. G.I. Joe Cobra was a legitimately great book. G.I. Joe Origins. We read all those things, and then we just sort of petered out.
That was enough. Yeah, that's exactly the right term. And I don't care about the Transformers. And the second that you take the fun thing about G.I. Joe for me as a kid and now, and as it was always that it wasn't fantastical or wasn't supposed to be anyway. I mean, it was like as a kid at least it felt like it was somewhat realistic. And then those G.I. Joe Cobra books were very grounded, and Transformers are not that. I know they're both from Hasbro, but other than that, like those are not chocolate and peanut butter to me. And so I tried to read a couple of the sort of
Was it Mike Costa or the Transformers books?
Yeah, there
also?
Are a handful of Transformers books that over the year that have been pretty beloved and critically lauded. I think it was a Megatron book that everybody, and I just don't care when I read them at all. And Michael Bay did not help.
Yeah, Michael Bay hurt a lot. I remember even as a kid, I liked the Transformers cartoon a lot as a kid. I watched the hell out of that. And the toys, obviously. But like, if you look back at my old comic collection before I gave it away, you know, I had every G.I. Joe book, but I had only a handful of Transformers books. Even as a kid, I didn't really get into the Transformers comics.
I couldn't afford that many of the toys.
I never really gotten into Transformers comics as much. I was more into the cartoon. You know, but even then, you guys were more into the G.I. Joe comic recently than I was. Like, I sampled a little bit. But again, like, I feel like I've only got so much nostalgia bucket to fill, and it just there's not enough room for G.I. Joe Transformers.
Basically, when Andy Schmidt was editing G.I. Joe books at IDW, they were really good.
Yeah, so they were legit good books. They were.
Yep.
And so, and that end of story. He's the one guy who made it work. So, other than that, we enjoyed watching the cartoons and playing with toys as kids. And that's really the extent of our fandom.
Yeah.
And
the fact that Shipwreck sounded exactly like Jack Nicholson.
A bad Jack
As
Nicholson.
Being done by Christian Slater.
Yes.
Which is what Christian Slater was.
All right.
Sorry.
It's time for one more email.
From Hampshire, England, said, I'm 24 now. I've been reading comics since I was 13 years old, hopefully thinking about that the whole time. I actually got into them right at the start of New Avengers. I've been hooked ever since. Recently, I'm starting to feel like comics just aren't aimed for me anymore. Now you're a comic book reader. There's words like mansplaining in them and jokes and memes that just go over my head. And a couple that don't, but I only know because somebody was moaning about on them about Tumblr, which I'm still not really sure what that is. I have comments. The characters feel like they're being written to try and appeal to teenagers, and that's fine. It was the case in the 90s, but I didn't really feel like that during the mid-2000s. Back then, they were just trying to feel good, tell good classic stories.
Whoa, slow down, take a breath.
I did.
You're falling off the rails.
Back then, I thought they were just trying to tell good classic stories. He has a typo there that threw me off. I reread Ed Brubaker's Captain America run, and I didn't feel like, wow, this is clearly aimed at a certain age group. So reading Marvel and DC as three people who are a lot older than me, go fuck yourself, are starting to feel isolated by
Well,
them.
It doesn't have to be mean about it.
Well, I don't think he was mean about it. I think you're reading into that.
We are a lot older than him. Yeah. We're 15 years older than him. Do you think trying to appeal to a specific age group gets in the way of telling a good story? Do you feel like the classic superhero magic is being lost at the moment? Anything reassuring? You've helped me so much when it comes to loving comics. Please let me know what you think about this.
I think that there's that. No, I think that.
First of all, he's like the oldest 24-year-old I've ever heard of.
I was going to say, as I read through this, I was like, I have never related to a person under 25 so much in my life.
Yeah.
I agree and I don't agree, Ron. I want to hear what you have to say before I counter.
Well, I was going to say I don't agree with everything that he says in terms of how he's interpreting it. I think what's happening is that I think that a lot of that stuff was written within the time, and in the same way that if you go back and read any Marvel comics from the 60s and 70s, they read of the time.
80s, 90s, they all...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And so I think that this is just a byproduct of the time that those comics were written in. I don't feel like they were targeted. They were just written at that of that time. That's my thought. So
I agree with that to an extent. I do also think that he's right that in the mid-2000s, it felt more like classic comics. But also, I don't think they're being written for teenagers now. I think what is happening is that there's a large segment of the comic writing group that is writing for the Twitter audience, because they spend so much time on it, that they're sort of in their own little bubble, and so everything that
the
comes up on Twitter,
generation.
Yes, everything ends up in those books written by a certain group of people who will spend all their time on it. I do see that happening. I do sometimes think they forget that there's a larger world outside of Twitter that read their books and don't get the jokes or the references. And don't want to read that, those kind of stories. I definitely do see that. At least from my opinion.
I really like what you said, Ron. There's a voice and a style and a thing that sort of happens in each era. And all those comics in the mid-2000s, a lot of those were by guys. I'm going to say guys because they were. Who, sort of idolized the comics of the 70s and 80s. And so they were doing a modern take on that, which was... There was a realism to them, but it wasn't the gritty darkness of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It was
grounded.
Yeah, it was grounded, but it was sort of relatable. And now this next... And so then the next step was to try to make them more fun, I think. To try to make them more like, say, the Avengers movie. Not specifically, but that kind of tone. Mm-hmm. And so that partially succeeded, but what it brought along with it was a modern sense of humor, which is actually a postmodern sense of humor, which is something that I have noticed that like whatever the mainstream cultural form of humor is right now, I feel like is leaving me behind to a certain extent. But that's, you shouldn't feel like this at 24, but God bless you.
Right.
But you're feeling, I mean, you're seeing that there's a tone, and I think that's they're trying to get an audience that they're also part of.
Right, and it's very much a contemporary artist, and no one writing, Ed Brubaker is a great writer, but in 2006 he was not thinking, how is this going to read in 10 years later in 2016.
And also, I don't think that book does well now.
Which one?
Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Oh, totally does.
Does it?
Yeah.
It doesn't come out, it doesn't have the same tone to it. I feel like Ed Brubaker
audience. Then it's not that book. I think if it's written that tone, I think it comes out now, it's still going to do really well. Yeah.
Well, everybody be like, right, I've read this before. What the hell?
Okay.
I really do think there's a segment of the comic population that spends too much time on Twitter. And it's
absolutely
leading into their work.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, if you have any questions or comments for us, you can email us and get in on the conversation, as they say over Twitter.
Great emails this week.
Yeah, really great emails. Yeah, good job. Good job, everyone. Bravo.
In a post-voicemail
world. Keep them coming. We definitely want to make more time for them to make sure you're getting a voice on the show. So please keep them coming. Email contact@ifanboy.com. And don't forget to tell us who you are and where you're from and how long you thought about something. So In the meantime, we have other podcasts. We've talked about other stuff that you're going to want to go download and listen. If you haven't gone back in the feed, and if you're into The Flash and Arrow and superhero TV shows, you're going to want to go back and listen to Connor and I discuss DC's Legends of Tomorrow premiere. We are 3 episodes in, and I'm hooked. So that's your little teaser. So you can hear us talk about the first episode. And Connor, how are you feeling about it?
I love it. I haven't watched 3 yet because I was out of town. But the second episode was bonkers and awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So yeah, so good stuff. Good stuff. So go download that if you need some more listening stuff. So
we mentioned earlier in the show that we're entering that part of the year where there's going to be a lot of special edition shows because there's lots of things coming out. So in addition to this Legends of Tomorrow show that Ron just mentioned, we just recorded a Batman Bad Blood show. Me and the animation brain trust Paul Montgomery came back, and Ryan Haupt, who was not biking at the time, we actually ended up talking an hour about Batman Bad Blood, the latest DC Universe animated original film, only half an hour on the film, and then almost a half an hour on my angst with the current state of the Batman world. So
worth it just to listen to that.
If you want to hear that, listen to our Batman Bad Blood podcast right behind
this. Haven't said here?
Yeah, I've been holding back here, actually.
Huh.
Man. I don't want to be too negative. So if you want to hear my thoughts on that, it's the show on the feed right behind this one. And then coming up in just about a week, I guess, will be our Deadpool special edition show. We don't know how that's going to work or who's going to be on it, but you can look for that. Soonish. Comes out next Friday, so it'll be sometime that weekend.
Yeah, and if you like us talking about movies that aren't about comic books, I've got good news for you. We do another podcast, a daily show called Goodfellas Minute, and it is exactly what that sounds like, where we each weekday talk about 1 minute of the film Goodfellas. We're in the last third. Does that sound right?
Yeah, we're in the last third. Yeah,
I think that's about right.
We're almost in the last home stretch. We're almost there.
Yeah, but you can go back and listen to it from the beginning. It is timeless content, but we love this movie, and we love talking about it and laughing about it and examining it in all different ways, and it's a good deal of fun. So make sure to check out Goodfellas Minute at, get this, goodfellasminute.com.
My favorite email we get on that is, what are you doing next? Jesus, let us finish this one.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, we got that email on episode 2.
Head over to ifanboy.com. To comment on this show, find all those other podcasts we just talked about other than Goodfellas. You can talk about this week's books. You can talk about Batman Bad Blood. You can talk about Legends of Tomorrow. You'll be able to talk about Deadpool. And then soon enough, you'll be able to talk about Batman versus Superman, but we're not going to talk about that right now. And all that's happening on ifanboy.com. You can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and at ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick week is going to be before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at Jay Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ronick. So,
do you think people realize that doing a daily 20-minute podcast is a lot of work?
Do they, Josh?
I don't think they do.
Well, but in the same way that we don't realize that making a weekly superhero TV show is a lot of work. I mean, we all have our cross to bear. That's all.
I definitely realize that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Okay. Finally, if you recognize that this is a lot of work and you appreciate it, do us a favor and help spread the word. You can go to iTunes and write a review that helps other people discover this podcast. Or better yet, tell your friends, introduce your comic book store or comic reading buddies or anybody else that you'd like. Say, hey, there's a podcast you should listen to. Check it out. It's called iFanboy. You can find it at ifanboy.com. And help us spread the iFanboy word, and we appreciate it. That's how we keep the iFanboy movement motivated and moving forward, forever forward. So, yeah.
All right. So we'll have our political platform all set to go next.
Yes. What we stand for.
It'll be terrific. There's going to be so much comic book winning. You're going to be sick of it. I've heard another guy doing. I'm trying to just. I think yeah. I got a good strategy here. It's terrific.
All right. What's the jam-packed show this week? Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
We got people on this comic book. I'm hearing a lot of really good things. I'm hearing good things. It's going to be terrific. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.